This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Bosnian War. Many of us remember the disturbing stories of ethnic cleansing as the nation fought for independence. It has been more than 25 years, and for many Americans, the affairs of Bosnia and Herzegovina are no longer a concern. But for Mirshad Hadžikadik, who was born in that region, it has become one of his biggest concerns. After 3 decades as UNC Charlotte professor, he announced his candidacy for the president of Bosnia, actually one of 3 presidents. His goal is to restore hope and to unify a nation that is still divided. As I said, 3 different presidents representing each of the 3 constituencies. The election is days away. Mirshad Hadžikadik joins us now. He is in Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia-Herzegovina, and he's a professor of computer science at UNC Charlotte. As I said, also a candidate for president of Bosnia. Mirshad, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it. And greetings to all of your listeners.
So, a professor at UNC Charlotte, you have been in Charlotte for years, and you suddenly decide to take a sabbatical and become a president of Bosnia. Tell us why.
It is really interesting. Over the years, I've had numerous attempts to help Bosnia. I was a founding president of advisory council that's in Washington, D.C., tried to educate members of the U.S. Congress about the situation in Bosnia. I was also the first and founding president of the Bosnian-Herzegovinian American Academy of Arts and Sciences that put together and organized people who have accomplished a lot in the U.S. In order to have them help Bosnia. But at some point, you realize that you cannot do much from here. You have to go down to Bosnia-Herzegovina and do something and to try to change the system within. I really have this sense of responsibility. I am so grateful both to Bosnia-Herzegovina and the U.S. for making me who I am today, somebody who is really a global citizen, who understands the importance of getting along, the importance of collaboration, the importance of peace and economic growth. And I thought that because of those 2 perspectives, I can do something. And, you know, that old saying, you only have those things that you give to others, really came back home with me. And I understand that in order to really have a meaningful life, your life cannot be about yourself only, that you have to give back to the community. And I have been giving to the community in Charlotte and North Carolina, but I also thought that this is a time to give back to Bosnia-Herzegovina and its people.
Help us understand now this political situation. We talked about 3 presidents. Politically, you know, what is the constitution? What is the political? What are the rules now in Bosnia? How are things governed, Bosnia and Herzegovina? How are things governed?
Right. The Dayton Agreement that was sponsored and organized by the U.S. government stopped the war. That agreement, the Annex 4 of that agreement, basically became the constitution of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Its provisions state that the power should be shared by the 3 constituencies or constituent peoples, Bosnian Serbs or Bosnian Protestants or Eastern Orthodox, Bosnian Croats or Bosnian Catholics, and Bosnian Muslims that people call here Bosniaks. Even though there's 51% of Bosniaks, about 37% or so of the Bosnian Serbs, and about 12 to 15% of the Bosnian Croats, they share power equally. And because of that, the president is really presidential council that has 3 members, 1 from each of the constituencies, and they serve the term of 4 years, and they rotate as a presiding member of the presidency every 8 months.
This sounds like a very difficult, complex, one might think even unworkable situation. How has it been working?
Well, it hasn't been working. It is an unworkable situation. I am certain that no developed democracy would accept an arrangement like this, because it allows each of these constituencies to prevent any kind of progress of the country and stop it in its tracks. And that's what has been happening. This is simply a result of the mistrust that is that's running deep, not in the populations, I would say, but in the politicians' ranks. Politicians are using the card of nationalism and religious hatred as a way to stay in power. And this is really divide and govern approach to politics, divide and conquer. And this is what is happening here. They are not allowing us to move forward. This country has to be a pure democracy in its form, in its simplest form, one person, one vote. But because of that mistrust, it is not happening. And it's going to take a long time before we can get to that point.
Well, this is a very complex story, and forgive the gloss here, but there was a time, what we remember when we say Bosnia, there is still the horrific ring of cities like Srebrenica and Sarajevo, the horrible atrocities that were taking place over a course of years before the NATO bombings finally ended the war, and as you say, an agreement reached in Dayton, Ohio. But before that, there was a sense that, you know, with the dissolution of Yugoslavia, that three independent nations, four really, Slovenia, Croatia, Serbia, and then Bosnia and Herzegovina, that these had been cobbled together as a country called Yugoslavia in the aftermath of World War I, held together by Josip Broz, known by his nom de guerre as Tito, held together for decades, and then it dissolved. And as you say, nationalism and religious hatred then became the card by which politicians could gain power as Yugoslavia dissolved. And then the atrocities followed. It meant in America, since it's the first time we'd heard that since our, you know, sort of high school history class, those names, Bosnia and Herzegovina, that these Balkan people were always fighting and there was nationalism was always a problem. Bosnia was not this way. It was a place in which these three ethnic groups, had been getting along for a very long time and were actually a model in multicultural practice. Talk about that moment in Bosnian history where these three groups got together quite well and were living and working together well.
Well, you're absolutely correct. At some point, this was a country that was and still can be a model of coexistence and collaboration and peaceful living together. Remember, at some point in 1300 whatever, Bosnia was a kingdom, and the Bosnians lived there. Subsequently, it was occupied by many, the Ottomans for 500 years, the Austro-Hungarians, and Germans, Italians, and then in the end, the communists came. And Bosnia and Herzegovina lost its sort of status of independent sovereign nation, was within some larger power. And it was used by neighboring countries, Serbia and Croatia, that established their national strategies. It was used as a place that they wanted to grab their territory from. And Croatia and Serbia always wanted to divide the Bosnia in half and take half of those territories. And they used really religion as a vehicle for that. Serbians from Serbia basically said, you know, if you're a Slav, Eastern Orthodox, you must be a Serb. And Croatians said, you know, if you're a Slav, Southern Slav, and you're Catholic, you must be Croat. So over the years, this concept of a Bosnian citizen of Bosnia-Herzegovina disintegrated into Bosnian Croats, Bosnian Serbs, and then the other one group was the Muslims. And over the years, the animosity started and really imported from the outside to the people who lived together. And after 100 years of brainwashing, it somehow took hold, and these people starting being enemies to each other, where they used to be neighbors who helped and supported each other. My job here is to really give that sense back to them and say, listen, you're Bosnians first. Then you can be Bosnian Serb and Croat and whatever you want to be. But Bosnian first, let's pick this country. Let's let's build this country so it's home to all of us, but it's equal and fair to all of us. And that's a struggle and a big challenge.
But can you put Humpty together again? I mean, because so many people's fortunes now are really dependent on their identity, identifying with a political party, which has its own, identity to continue to promote. Isn't it dangerous for a citizen to work outside of that, to vote for an independent who has no power, who has no particular constituency and may not be able to get anything done? How do you do that? How do you manage to change that culture?
It's absolutely dangerous. There is a reason I and people from this campaign received death threats. And there's a reason why the media is blocking us in terms of having access to media, to people, through the media channels. People who are in power, for the most part, are just using the situation to get rich. I don't believe they're nationalists. They're just using this card of nationalism and religious fervor to become rich and not for the benefit of their people. How do you fight that? It is hard because when the money is in play, they become ruthless. This is mafia-style politics. And I'm appealing directly to people, telling them that we need to wake up, to have a different set of values, different value system, to go back to the old where we appreciated hard work and there was the rule of law, which we don't have now. It is hard, but the most important thing is that only these nationalists have their time in the media. Those who are for Bosnia-Herzegovina from all religious backgrounds, they don't have any kind of attention by the media and by the ruling structures. And therefore, that's my strategy, to point a light on them and give them a chance to express their views. There are pro-Bosnian Serbs, there are pro-Bosnian Cross, there are pro-Bosnian Muslims, pro-Bosnian Jews, Romas, and we need them to give them a platform, a voice. There are more of us than those nationalists, and I believe that we can do that. It's going to take time. I know that.
But I wonder forgive me for interrupting, but I wonder if time is on your side. If we look at what has happened since the mid-90s, since the Dayton Accords, right, and when the Western democracies were wagging their fingers at those Balkans who were fighting over nationalism, things have gotten worse in the West. Nationalism has taken a kind of pathetic, pathological nationalism has taken root in the United States, in England, and in Western Europe. It's taking root. Nationalism is now the disease of those Western democracies who were once wagging their fingers at the Balkans. It seems to me that one could say things are actually moving in the other direction all over the world.
Absolutely true. And those countries, as well as Hungary and Poland and so on. Yes, yes. And the Syrian refugees crisis is not helping either. That is true. The nationalism, the right-wing style nationalism is showing up and rising everywhere. But I think that that's not a future of any country. I don't know of any successful, long-term successful country that is built on any kind of nationalism. And I would like Bosnia to be actually the light for the whole world, to show here, if we can show here that nationalism cannot win, that the diversity will win, become prosperous, then it becomes a case in point for the whole world. And I honestly think, regardless of how far-fetched it might sound to some people, then Bosnia might be the way to the future. Because, people say that Bosnia has to join the European Union and the world. I'm saying, before Bosnia goes to the world, the world will come to Bosnia because the world is becoming more diverse. Those countries in Europe are becoming more diverse. And therefore, they need to figure out how to solve that problem. Where, what better case study than Bosnia? It's small, it can be a laboratory, and it's as complex or more complex than any other.
What about Bosnia now as a locus for international investment? It seems to me that one of the ways to ironically undermine this kind of pathological nationalism is through global capitalism, which, as you suggest, needs to be multicultural. Is Bosnia a good place for investment now, or could you make the argument that unless we divest ourselves of this nationalism, we will never become a viable investment for global capital?
Appreciate the question. It is wonderful. Economy is a big part of the solution, moving economy, getting it going. In the first 10 years after the war, Bosnia was one of the top 20 countries for investments in the world. Now, what happened was we had there is something that's called Office of High Representative, a person who can govern Bosnia. It has what's called bond powers. That person can do anything, can rule the country as a dictator. In the first 10 years, Lord Paddy Ashdown from Great Britain, from the UK, used the bond powers, moved the country in the right direction. Since then, they stopped using those powers, the subsequent high representatives, and the nationalists came back into the power. With them, corruption. When you have corruption, there are no investments. Right now, Bosnia is in probably high 80s or low 90s place in the world for investments. We need to reverse that. But you know what? We need help of the European Union and the U.S. international world powers to help us with that. Unfortunately, they are divided too. You know, Moscow, the Russia and United States and UK and Germany and Turkey, and they want different things. They don't know. They don't have one voice, and thus are not helping Bosnia and Herzegovina at this time.
Let's talk about this run for presidency on your personal life and your family life. There's been a podcast that's been following you and your candidacy, and your daughter was recently on talking about your decision and how she felt about that. Let's listen.
I'm a physician by trade, and so my nature is to research everything 400,000 times over before I think it's a good idea. So my questions were questions to him. I mean, I finally come back to Charlotte for the first time in probably 25 years to be closer to my family, which was a big intent to be closer to my family. And you're going to turn all that around, and have you thought about that? And so, and he said he did, and he understood what a big sacrifice it was.
That's from the podcast following the candidacy of UNC Charlotte professor Mirshad Hajekatic, who is running for the presidency, one of the presidents of Bosnia. So what about that, the personal decision, the effect on you, your career, and your family?
It was a hard decision, I have to tell you. Professionally, I was probably at the top in terms of my career when I had a lot of international conferences going, international journal, running an important initiative at UNC Charlotte. Tough time to for the family because, yeah, my daughter came back, two grandchildren now, my son is there, they all have their families. And this is a sacrifice. I made it much harder for a lot of people, my family, UNC Charlotte. But through this, all of them were tremendously grateful. I received tremendous support from the colleagues at UNC Charlotte, the administration of UNC Charlotte. The family, even though a lot of questions, they all got behind me. And I know they were worried about my safety too, and still are, and their own safety. Because of the fact that these people, because there's a lot of money at stake, can do anything and will not stop doing anything. So a lot of sacrifices, but at the end, you know, there are those higher goals. And you're basically saying my safety is not important. Yes, it is my safety, safety of my family is. But there are risks. And I felt that this is something that one should do, that I need to do. We cannot be selfish. We have to think about the global community. And I decided to do it.
Well, good luck. I am at liberty to say this because this election is not in our listening area. So good luck on Sunday when the election for a Bosniak president will take place. Mirshad Hajekatic is a professor of computer science at UNC Charlotte and a candidate for president of Bosnia. Good luck and thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time we spent together.
Mirshad Hajekatic will be at UNC Charlotte Center City on October 22nd to share details of his journey. Just ahead, reports of alleged sexual harassment by famous chefs have emerged, and we'll talk about the impact of the Me Too movement in the kitchen when the state of things continues. Stay tuned.